Welcome to the Safety Podcast, where we connect health, safety and environment to keep you learning, evolving and having a positive impact. Thanks for taking the time to join us for this episode. Let's get started. Hiya, thank you for joining me here for this episode of the Safety Podcast. Someone I've been chasing for a few months, I've finally got him on the show. His name is Mark Breen and he is the owner and part owner and operator of a business called Cuckoo Events, who also have a brand that is an offshoot of that particular brand that focuses on safety at events, and that's safeevents.ie. He helps people to develop and implement plans and strategies for large events across Ireland. And I thought it would be interesting to bring him on the show, particularly because, just what he does in general in terms of having to strategize within different environments and managing that constantly changing client need, which I think, you know, for HSC professionals is something that sort of transfers across well into what you need to do on a weekly basis if you are looking after health and safety. But also as well as that, there was a tragic incident that happened in Ireland this year where some young folks ended up tragically killed because of a crossing incident at an event. And just that sort of brought things into focus in terms of the importance of safety at events. And having been someone that attended lots of, you know, concerts and things in my younger years, more so, it's something that, you know, is close to home for me as well. And hopefully, you know, it's of interest to you guys to hear how Mark and his team address the challenges that are brought, you know, to them from their clients, and that transfers, as I say, hopefully into things like change management within your business and just the importance of different things like communication and liaising with your stakeholders and so on. But I'll let Mark do the talking on that. It is quite a long conversation that we have, and I'll wrap it up for you as usual at the end. So hopefully you get value from this, whatever you're doing today, and we'll look forward to hearing the feedback from you. Okay, we'll go over and speak to Mark. Mark Breen, it's been a long time coming.
That's true.
We have tried to get together on this, haven't we, for quite some time, but it's great to have you on the podcast. Thanks for joining us here and taking the time out of your Friday to have a discussion with us around some of the work that you do with safeevents.ie, obviously specializing in event safety. It's something that is of interest to me and probably a lot of our audience as well, because I'm sure there's very few of us out there who haven't been attending an event or some sort of, you know, celebration or music event or something similar, sport event, that that your work would be applicable to. So thanks for taking the time. I know you're hard pushed these days.
No, you're welcome. And listen, I think the delays in us having this conversation are largely down to me and my workload. So thank you for the patience.
No worries. It's a virtue I'm always continuing to practice, so it's okay. And it's not easy to put the time aside and to share what, you know, you've been up to. But to give us a context, as I always do with people on the show, you know, how have you got into this? I've obviously watched what you're doing, and obviously being based in Ireland primarily, you know, kept an eye on some of the things you've been involved in with quite a bit of interest, and as I say, a personal interest as well. So like, how have you ended up doing what you're doing?
I suppose that this question has come up a bit in various places over the last few years, and I think now that I put some thought into it, my mother can trace it back to my rearing as a child, where I had my sister has special needs, and my mother always said, look, from a young age you would have been looking after her. So I guess you can probably trace the whole me looking after people or attempting to look after people back that far. In my teens then, 16, 17, 18, I worked doors. I did nightclubs. I worked as a lifeguard because I was a competitive swimmer for a while. I tried to be a competitive swimmer for a long time. I wasn't very good, but that got me into lifeguarding. And then between that, I guess, and doing security work on doors in nightclubs and things, that was probably the genesis of it, really, from a getting paid to do it perspective. I went to college then and got involved with what we developed into a safety and security team of students who worked on the student events. So that was in the University of Limerick, and the ENTS crew, as they were called, already existed. And I suppose a couple of us got involved around the same time and and just sought to kind of develop it and bring it along. And it was around the time that licensing was coming in to Ireland for security and for door staff. And it was when concerts and festivals started to grow in Ireland. So we found ourselves kind of maybe at a zeitgeist of change in the country where people who looked after people in big crowds and at big events were needed. And I guess I got into it that way. I was studying business, but involved in events a lot, part-time and voluntarily while in college. And then ultimately I ended up, my first proper job, I suppose, out of college, then after, once I left and came to Dublin, would have been as an events and marketing manager in a third level college here. So I would have been running events, planning them, and doing a lot of the same kind of security and safety work part-time and on the side as well during the summers when the festivals run and stuff like that.
Wow.
So that's probably how it happened. Like a lot of people in this game, it was security was probably the background, you know?
Right, okay. You're very much a pure breed, though. That's a lifelong kind of progression and organic progression that you seem to been on to come to where you are today, and obviously gained a lot of knowledge and experience over that time, I'm sure, and probably seen a lot of change as well, I would imagine. I can say for sure I probably attended plenty of the events that you've been involved in organising, the safety around. Don't know if I've ever bumped into you or not, but haven't been to one of those festivals for a while. Could very well have. Go ahead.
Sorry, yeah, one thing I always say is, interestingly, given what I do now, I have pretty much zero traditional health and safety training or any sort of a background in it. I'm a purist from the event side. Yes. And I guess it just, timing kind of works out. I mean, the industry, our specialization is in event safety and crowd safety, like you said. And I guess it's quite a young industry. It's only started to grow in the last maybe 5 to 10 years. There are courses now that never existed before. So whereas people can decide now and go, I'm going to get into event safety or I'm going to get into crowd safety, it wasn't really a thing, I guess, when I was coming up through college and making decisions like that. So my background is very much events, running events. And then we have found ourselves just focusing on the safety side. So from an experience perspective, that would have brought me into it. And then we've been, the way we do our work, we're quite keen to constantly, now that there are courses and there are specialists who train in this stuff, we spend a lot of time traveling to do training and learning our craft and trying to bring that back to Ireland then. Because again, it's the industry is young globally. And then as with anything, as a small island, it's very, very young here. And we tend to spend a good bit of time kind of pushing the agenda and trying to make people realize this is a thing. Now, I don't want attendees realizing it. You shouldn't go to an event and be worrying about or thinking about, are there safety people? Are they minding me? That should be implicit in you've bought a ticket. You should expect to be minded. But yeah, for the likes of us who work in safety, there's probably going to be an understanding that, God, this is a big operation. There's probably people in the background who are looking after safety on this and do things that I've never even thought of, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It definitely gives you a different perspective whenever you're looking at it from that point of view, you know. 20-year-old me looked at it quite differently than 30-year-old me, I have to say. That would be, not that I'm 30 now, of course, but I think you're right there. You really don't know how much work, or don't sometimes appreciate how much work goes on in the background of these things. And unfortunately, the event safety was brought into quite stark contrast recently here in Northern Ireland, with a tragic event that happened where people were crushed, and there's some deaths, unfortunately, which was really horrible to see, which I'm sure you know well about. And unfortunately, these types of events do bring certain things into focus quite rapidly for obvious reason. But one of the things we discussed, Mark, which you had mentioned, is that still with regularity, the public does seem to be placed in unnecessary risk, either knowingly or unknowingly by event organisers. And can you give us sort of an idea of, you know, how things are generally out there, and, you know, what the lay of the land is, so to speak?
Yeah, well, I think I mean, it has to be said, things are improving. And again, I'd say in the last 3 to 5 years, I've seen things improve, and I've seen, you know, we see people come on our courses. We see the people that care and actually want to be running safe events, and then you can see events they're involved in, you know, get better. And you can see it's good when you run courses for people, and then you can down the track see in what they produce, you can see the benefit of the courses, if that makes sense. So a lot of people run events and are not trying to put people at risk. I mean, I'm not saying that people are trying to put people at risk, but it's a case of sometimes you don't know what you don't know. And sometimes, as with anything, it can be a case of just a lack of joined up thinking. So one stakeholder isn't perfectly in tune with another stakeholder, and then what materializes on the ground isn't ideal. And you'd stand there thinking, surely a 2 minute conversation could have knocked that on the head. We had we saw an interesting one in the last year on an event in Ireland where it was a very large event, but where someone, there was obviously some level of risk assessment done that indicated that there was a threat in a certain area or a risk in a certain area from a vehicle attack. So someone had decided, okay, we need to put HVM, a hostile vehicle mitigation barrier, at the back of the stage. Now, that in itself actually did make sense, because there was a perpendicular road to the back of that stage. And if you managed to drive that and build up a load of speed, you could instigate an attack on the back of the stage with a vehicle carrying explosives or something. So that, as a risk assessed element, made sense to me. I could see that would make sense. Put a barrier there and put other mitigation measures in place. But a barrier there made sense. But what was placed within 5 meters of the barrier is what then illustrated the lack of joined up thinking to me. So the event had fireworks, as a lot of events now do. And it had catering, it had all sorts of things. So someone had decided that the back of the stage was the perfect place to store spare gas canisters. Now, again, in isolation, that I can see the logic of why someone would put them there, because that was the edge of the site. With the road network the way it was, if you needed to go pick them up, it was quite an easy place to access them and pop them on the back of a truck and bring them to where you need to bring them. But someone deciding that, for what to me seemed like a perfectly logical reason, and someone else deciding, look, there's a risk of a vehicle attack here, we need to put a barrier in place. You put the two of them together, and then you have to find yourself wondering how anyone decided to place a load of gas canisters in the exact spot you've acknowledged there's a risk a vehicle could impact and cause damage and cause an explosion.
Yeah. You're just giving them the free explosives.
Well, exactly. Now, I don't think for a second either party there was trying to put anyone in danger. But it's a function of how the event was planned, maybe who was talking to whom, you know, what meetings were had. And again, it happens. We try and avoid it as much as possible, but it does happen that decisions are made that maybe you feel you should be privy to and weren't privy to. And, you know, no event is planned absolutely perfectly and doesn't go off absolutely perfectly. But what you want is the event is planned well. You've good people on the ground implementing it. Changes are made as they need to be, and everyone goes home safe. I mean, that's the ultimate goal. The problem in our industry, which is probably similar to many of your listeners' industries, irrespective of where you're involved in health and safety, is that to me is a near miss. And should be recorded as a near miss, and we should learn from it. But I bet my motorbike that it wasn't seen as such by organisers. It's probably not on the radar. It's probably not something that will never happen again, because people saw it happen once and went, God, we can't let that happen again. So we have that struggle in our industry too, where unless something really bad happens, there's a worry that there's no learning from it. And it's down to individual organisers to kind of to find their own learning, even in an event that goes off well from the public's perspective. You know, we would spend a lot of time then looking at it going, look, that wasn't ideal. How would we improve it? Because like I said, we don't want people coming to our events thinking about their safety and worrying about it. They have a right to believe someone in there is looking after them, and that's what we're there to do.
It sounds like it all come down to communication, as do many things. Do you, with your business, help from that perspective in terms of making sure that all the stakeholders and people involved are well informed? Does that form a part of what you do?
Yeah, I mean, you know, 9 out of 10 times with our business, and the way we run events, we are the ones, the buck stops with us. We are, you know, as per the guidelines here in the Republic, we are the event controllers, we are the safety officers. It all comes back to us. We are the ones convening meetings of the right people in a room. We are the ones pulling everyone together if the left hand needs to talk to the right hand. Generally, that does fall on us. And to be honest, that's the way we like it. You know, I'm of the school of thought where I'll happily take the credit for stuff, and I'm more comfortable taking the blame for it myself as well if everything comes under our remit. And I'll capture learning. I know we will capture learning for ourselves. So if it all comes back to us, I'm comfortable that way. I'm not saying we get it right every single time, but I'm more comfortable that way than people having their own little silos and maybe coming together in the odd meeting. And I mean, that is becoming better. You get statutory agencies and stuff, and you know, maybe previously they wouldn't have great regard for the people planning the events. They mightn't have thought they took safety seriously. So when the likes of us get involved and they see the way we do our work, you know, you build relationships over time. You find those meetings are much better attended and people are much more willing to sit with you and discuss stuff because they know you're coming from a place of, we want this to be safe and you need to talk to this guy and we all need to come to a solution. So the communication piece is key, because if I had to bet on how that situation at the back of that stage happened, I would very much be pretty sure that it happened because, you know, one party at the table didn't talk to the other, or they did talk, but one wasn't for budging, and that's where things were happening, and we'll both do our own thing, and hopefully nothing goes wrong, you know?
Yeah. There needs to be some sort of mediation there in the middle, doesn't there? But I suppose that's a good point in terms of, like, you know, your company will take the learning from a specific activity or outcome of an event, something that's happened or something you've improved. In the industry more generally, and I suppose this question, you know, it comes from, a lack of sharing learning sometimes across different sectors. But is there any, within the events sector, you know, how is the sharing of information when it comes to doing things better? Do you help each other in any way? Or is there any sort of channels for people to share best practices?
I would say there are opportunities and it does happen. I'd say in a lot of respects, it's us and our company driving that and providing those opportunities. But what I have to say is, even since we've been in business, which is, 7.5 years, it is getting a lot better. I think there are people in the industry, and it's just the timing of the development here. There are people that are only starting to understand this is all a thing and should be a thing. Yeah. So when you give those people opportunities, much like any industry, they tend to take them and enjoy them and they get involved. Of course, you have people who've, you know, been in the industry longer and like to do things their own way and maybe aren't as comfortable, especially when it comes to sharing best practice or learnings from, look, we nearly had this go wrong. I think you could learn from it. It might apply to your event. We run a lot of courses. We run industry events that might get, we did 3 last year. One of them had 50 people in a room. One of them had 130 in a room. So depending on the topic, we can find that the industry is quite interested in all sitting in a room and discussing things together. And we all tend to get something out of it. So again, I think if you ask me this question in a few years' time, I will hopefully be telling you it's even more and more positive. But I guess running events like that cost us money. So from the point of view of, are they worthwhile and are we seeing people engage? I would say, yes, they are worthwhile. People are engaging, and it'll take a while to get even more and more traction. But I think if we're open about it and if we're there putting ourselves out there going, look, we think we're the best at what we do, but we don't get it right all the time. Maybe you could learn from when we didn't get it quite right. And at those types of events or at courses, like simple things, like if I'm doing presentations and I'm showing pictures of things that went wrong in events, I try and use our events if I can. I try and use maybe something that wasn't right. I get a photo before we fix it, but I use that for illustration as opposed to, you know, potentially picking on someone else's event. Now, if I do have to use someone else's event from a training or a learning perspective, you know, I blur out branding or whatever. You'd be sensitive that way because our focus is trying to teach people and have people understand this stuff more. Personally, I'm more comfortable if I can use our own events.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to ruffle feathers, and we want to bring people along and we want people to learn with us. We don't get it right all the time, but we definitely try and care. And to me, as long as that's where we're coming from, we can sit in a room with the police or the Garda Síochána here or the fire officers. We can debate things. We can have those conversations. As long as I know that the people on the other side of the table are sitting beside us or whatever, they get where we're coming from. They know we care and they know we're trying to run a safe event, even if they don't agree with the way we're doing it and we have to come to a compromise, or I have to convince them or they have to convince me. So, I mean, the industry is really getting involved in all of this stuff now, especially on the statutory agency side, which is great. I mean, they come to these events, they come to the courses we run. Everyone's getting into one another's headspace, which ultimately should lead and does lead, we've seen it, to safer events where the public might even not notice a difference in an event from year one to year two. We could all be sitting there smug going, this is so much safer. We're so much happier with how this is being run now.
Yeah.
And again, the public might feel no difference, which is often the case.
Super. Well, I think, you know, from an objective point of view, I would say that, you know, you can do nothing but positive things for your own brand by being transparent and using examples where you've learned. And as you say, you know, you're demonstrating that you are learning and you're willing to learn and you're willing to take ownership, which for a lot of us, I think, just even across the profession is something that a lot of us struggle with. So, you know, fair play to you for doing that. And, you know, if you're at the forefront of that progression, Mark, then I'm sure it'll only lead to good things. What you're talking about using real examples there, and something that we had touched on when we had a chat, was one of the major challenges for you guys is that the distinction between determining what is a real risk and something you should be paying a lot of time toward and putting energy into versus topical threats that come up year on year, things that, you know, come out of nowhere, they may be new and get a lot of attention that can then sort of divert your energy and resources in another direction. Is that something that you deal with well, do you think, or is it a struggle for you guys, or do you see other people in the industry getting caught up, you know, with those sort of flavor of the month kind of things, although that's not a good terminology for it?
No, but I know what you mean, and it's been a topic I've kind of been speaking on for a couple of years now. I've done some work with the International Institute of Risk and Safety Management on a couple of conferences we ran with them in the UK, where I did a quick session on what I called real risks versus topical threats. And that's exactly what it is. There's an inherent risk for us as an industry that, like, if you take a year like 2017, where in Europe, generally, there were a number of attacks on crowds and events where vehicles were used as a weapon. So we call them, obviously, vehicle as a weapon attacks. So there was a good few of those. People get hurt, people get killed, they make the news, and that's all, you know, it's all tragic, and that's these things are definitely happening. But the question is my event in Dublin, for instance, now at more risk because there was, you know, there were three vehicle attacks in London, there was two in Paris, there was one in Barcelona. And what we generally see happen, and this isn't just an Irish thing, this happens everywhere, but when things like that occur, the focus shifts to them big time. So around 2017, for instance, you would have had infrastructure companies based in Ireland who started building barriers specifically to market as vehicle attack barriers. And again, they have their place. So one of the messages we're trying to kind of impress on everyone who doesn't already think this way is that everything we do, every decision we make in planning and managing an event has to be based on a risk assessment. And that's a risk assessment for our event. So if our event is in Dublin and if there's never been a vehicle attack and if the road network doesn't really lend it to a vehicle attack and there's no genuine increased risk to our event of a vehicle attack, then sitting in a room where perhaps the local authority or the police, the Garda Síochána, are insisting on some hostile vehicle mitigation barriers, that's a conversation we have to have. Because I get where it's coming from, and they're seeing it happen in Paris, they're seeing it happen in Barcelona. But if we as competent professionals, and again, the key word there being competent, but if we have risk assessed it and we do not believe our event is at any greater risk of a vehicle attack, well, then we probably don't need to be putting in those barriers.
How difficult is it, I guess, to actually, communicate that message convincingly and get the right outcome, using a measured risk assessment approach? Because this is very transferable to other aspects of health and safety, of course. So it's a real important one. And your context is probably one of the most difficult, I would say, contexts that you can put this into.
It depends on the personalities around the table. And to be honest, a lot of it depends on us and how we communicate it. Work we do that isn't event specific. A lot of the stuff we're doing kind of on the side or in the background or building our reputation or helping the industry develop and putting on courses and classes and events for the industry, all of that is building towards people understanding we have a competence in this area. So if we're sitting in a room going, I 100% get why we're all sitting here going, there was another vehicle attack last weekend in Europe, we need to consider this. It has been considered. We have considered it. Here is where we've landed on it. And we do a lot of work on our client side as well. Clients come to us and work with us because they know we're realistic about crowd and event safety. If we feel there's a genuine risk of, and let's stick with the vehicle thing for a second for illustration. Yeah. If we do feel there's a genuine risk, we will be the ones convincing the client they need to spend $10,000 for these barriers in these positions. I am equally comfortable having that conversation and have had to have it. Clients understand that if we tell them they need it, we really feel they need it. And in the same vein, what we need is, and what we have to a large degree, are the statutory agencies, the licensing authorities, understanding that's where we come from as well. We may not be spending our clients' money on those hostile vehicle mitigation barriers because our risk assessment says we don't need them. But look, we are actually spending some of their money over here because we've identified this risk. So as long as there's balance and they know you're coming from the right place and you communicate it to them well, all these things can be discussed. And generally, you get to a place where people understand why you've landed where you've landed. It's documented. It's in a plan. And everyone's comfortable that, look, that is based on a proper risk assessment. I get where you're coming from. We've considered it, and here's our decision.
It is a good example to use. And again, it comes back to good communication, being able to demonstrate your decision-making process and why you've taken a stance on something and diverted maybe resources where they're more felt to be more of more benefit. Which is, it's really important, I think, for people listening and anyone who has this type of challenge. Often it's difficult to go one way or other, especially when you have something, I'm sure in your context, you've got a very highly emotional subject matter and, a threat to the public that's very real, regardless of whether it's, in this country or elsewhere. And it's a tough thing to manage, I'm sure, when you've got external agencies putting pressure on with good reason probably, and again emotionally affected by this as well, not wanting to take the wrong decision. It's definitely, as you say, it comes down to being confident in your decision making and having a good process in place so that you can look back on anything with confidence that you did go in the right direction. So with that in mind, then, Mark, obviously, again, I think drawing parallels and why I think it's really interesting to discuss this with you from the wider profession point of view is you are tackling events. A lot of the times, when you're doing that, I'm sure there's very much similarities from one event to the other. But with that said, you'll need to do individual assessments for each one, and there'll be a lot of intricacies and differences between them. With that in mind, and again, bringing it into the context of challenges for people in general around safety and managing change and so on, is there anything that you can share with your approach as to how you go about it that can help us in terms of actually dealing with change and making sure that, again, we have a good process in place for that?
Yeah, well, again, I suppose one of the things, and I'm not saying it's unique about us, but this is, I'm sure many approach it this way in our business and elsewhere, is We want to have as broad a context and as broad an understanding of the environment we're operating in as we possibly can. What we often find is, you know, clients or people we're working with on a project may think, oh, they're the safety people, they'll need to know X, Y, and Z. And being honest, we'd prefer to know everything from A to Z and have it in our heads, and because some of the stuff will impact where someone else won't even realize it will impact. And we might have a production team that are producing the event and coming to us for advice on X, Y, and Z. And we've often have it said where we go, do you guys need all that information? Like, we're much happier to have it because there's a broader context to everything, and something over there in isolation may not really impact what we do for a client or on a big event. But that in isolation, plus the three other things in isolation, if you add them together, might now have us going left instead of right in something we do, if that makes sense. So, I mean, we have, I guess, what we call the five I's of how we approach stuff. And that's pretty much the first one is immerse. So we want to immerse ourselves and get as much context to what we're doing and everything that will impact what we're doing as we can. You know, in a different industry, in a different environment, that might all be internal. You might have an internal server you can go to get every piece of information you want. In our world, it can be quite different. There could be seven different people involved or seven different companies involved in running various parts of an event. And we're trying to put that overall jigsaw together. And then for the benefit of the event and those attending, build what we need to build for them. So that's our first thing. That's about we immerse ourselves in it and try and have as much of a context as we possibly can. Then we tend to, our next stage is imagine. So we go on to consider any and all ways a particular challenge or a particular issue could be dealt with. We always kind of say in our office, like, nothing's off the table. So just because we haven't done it before doesn't mean it's not the solution now. Just because it didn't work when we put it on the table for the event last year doesn't mean it won't work this year. So we try and come up with as many logical ways that might potentially work and be of benefit. And then we just whittle it down to what actually will work in this exact instance. We've had events that on paper will look quite similar, but how we approach them, how we deal with them, and how we solve a similar challenge across them would be completely different. For instance, we're working in Dublin Zoo at the minute for a job we do in there every year with a series of events over 10 weeks, and they're in the dark and you've got animals and you've got everything that comes along with an operational zoo. Mm-hmm. The approach we take to plan and manage that event, that same roadmap and approach is the one we would take to have planned and managed the Government of Ireland presence at the Ploughing Championships in September, or the Flag Ceoil in Drogheda, which would have had over 500,000 people visit across 10 days. So our roadmap and our approach tends to be the same, but solutions to problems could be wildly different. So our next stage then for us is to iterate. We'll explore the models or the options we think will work best, and we'll work through them and we'll realize, okay, that looked like it'll work, but it's not maybe the best. Park that for a second. Let's look at this way of dealing with it. Let's look at that way of dealing with it. And we spend that time looking at different ways to fix things. We're very careful not to go, this worked on the last similar event, so it'll definitely work now. The emergency planning for the zoo, as an example, would be highly complex. Mm-hmm. For lots and lots of reasons. We would have done things in there, and we implement things in the zoo that we've never implemented on other events. And in some respects, those other events would have very similar challenges, and in some respects might be much higher risk. But some of the things we do in the zoo just would not work elsewhere. So we've come up with what works for that event in that environment. So things that work in Dublin Zoo may not work in the streets of Drogheda or the streets of Dublin when we shut a load of roads for Dublin Pride. So we'll iterate many, many times. We can come up with something we think works, and we'll go through versions and revisions of it. We've often had clients jokingly kind of laugh at the number of revisions we will do of an event management plan, because we'll often find a way to tweak something that makes a big difference, but it might only be a paragraph on a page in a plan. But for us, it's a change, and it's very important, and it will keep people safer and have that event run better. So that is another revision of the plan, even though it's only maybe one paragraph of change. Yeah. So the next stage for us then, sorry, is to integrate. We want to integrate the safety element into the entire event. So again, 9 times out of 10, actually maybe 8 times out of 10, the way the business is evolving and the industry is evolving, we're doing the safety, but we're actually producing and looking at the content and doing all that too. So most times when we're involved in an event, we're pretty much running it in its entirety, which is very helpful when you do the safety end the way we do. So from an integration perspective, we know if we're the ones doing all the content and the production as well, we know that safety is underpinning everything. That's a much easier element. That's the fourth step in our process. And it's a whole lot easier to integrate safety if we in our office are in charge of all the other elements as well, if that makes sense.
Okay, so you're actually getting involved in the media end of it, the actual production as such, in terms of what the event is, if it's music or whatever.
Yeah, quite often we are. And again, I suppose Safe Events is a brand within our company, which is actually called Cuckoo Events. So we started as a full service event management company, and over the years have done more and more of this type of work and have specialized in the safety and the planning side. Yes. But I mean, we could be dressing a ballroom for a ball for a big client as well. So often, like if you take something like the FLA Ciúil that was in Drogheda this year, which is the largest global celebration of Irish music and culture. It's a huge thing. It moves around Ireland. It shuts down towns for a week and puts on a party, basically. Yeah. Like our team would have done everything from start to finish on that. So we're programming the events. We're programming with a load of voluntary people on committees from the FLA, but we're literally involved in every element of it, which means we can be very sure that safety is being integrated into every element of it. That can be, we're generally still quite successful at it, and we work with the same partners a lot of the time, but it is harder to integrate safety when I have to go to Mary to talk about the food and the beverage, and I have to go to Johnny to talk about the infrastructure. It's doable. It just takes more time, and it makes that fourth step in our process that little bit harder. So if we can wave a magic wand, we'll always like to be taking on the full thing.
Okay.
Because that way we make sure safety does underpin everything. And safety underpinning things might have very little impact on those things, but it's a thought process and it's been considered. And we know that those things have been laid out that way in that courtyard, not just because they look pretty, but also with things like we want them to be 3 meters apart and where is the power coming from and all that in mind as well. Because those are the types of things, if they're not considered early, you know, maybe we're parachuted in with 2 weeks to go and we're going, look, you can't really have that close to that other one. And if you move the layout this way, it will work much better for you. So we like to be involved early and if possible, looking after all of those elements, or at least in those conversations as early as those conversations are happening. And then the fifth step for us then on the five eyes is implementation. So again, probably still 9 times out of 10, this changes slightly with certain clients who are very, very experienced and know what they're doing. But generally, we insist on, as well as developing your plan and helping you plan a really safe event, we tend to insist on us being the ones working with you to implement it. In practicality, what that tends to mean is, in the Republic, the way guidance and everything works, there'll be an event controller and there'll be a safety officer. Those are key roles set out in guidance here. So we tend to operate in those roles for clients. So we won't just write a big shiny plan, do a load of work and hand it to them and go, off you go. Which is what some clients would want for lots of reasons. They would just want that. We tend to insist that, look, if we're writing the plan, we need to be there to make sure it's implemented. And it's not just that the plan is implemented, but it's that good people know how to change that plan on the ground if it needs changing. That's one of the risks with a well thought out, lovely, shiny event management plan, is that someone else then takes it and goes, I have to do it this exact way. And no matter how good you are at planning events, things will often change and the layout will be different on the day. Someone didn't do something the way they said they would. And what we are actually there to do is alter that plan slightly on the fly and go, look, what the plan says isn't going to work for this particular thing. And that's one of our major risks all the time. So we insist generally on being the ones there to implement it. Now, that can often, first time around with a client, that can be a tough conversation sometimes. What we have always found is that once we work with them on the ground to implement it, it's an absolute no-brainer after that. And we tend to work with the same clients year on year. We tend to be fairly successful in, you know, continuing relationships and signing new deals and all that kind of stuff to work with the same people over and over again, because we tend to really buy into what we're working on, especially on, you know, large scale events like things like Dublin Pride or the Government of Ireland thing at the Ploughing Championships or the zoo. Like, they're an awful lot of work. They're movable feats. They change. There'll be different challenges this year than there were last year. That's what we enjoy. We enjoy working with event organizers and with clients and growing and developing with them. So that implementation step, that fifth one for us, kind of, it's nearly our payoff for all the planning work. And it's the bit we really enjoy and going, that sounded great in the room, lads, when we sat there for half a day. But now that we're here, it actually doesn't work, does it? And if we're all there looking at each other going, no, but do you know what will work? Then you amend the plan. It works much better for the client, works much better for the attendees. And that's as important to us as all that work done from once planning it, if that makes sense.
Absolutely does. Mark, I think, you know, the biggest thing I'm getting out of this is, again, the parallels that this has across any sort of planning or procedural, you know, documenting or process development that you might go through in any context, and actually being involved in getting your hands dirty and, you know, trying to implement things, realizing where a plan in theory isn't, you know, physically or literally, you know, implementable or whatever that may be, is really important. And for our audience, you know, it's a great reminder that when you are involved in the paperwork side of things, that, you know, that's only a very small part of the equation, and the real learning takes place when you get down to business and you actually act out what you've planned and be involved in that process. And as you found with your clients, there's a huge amount of value and trust building that goes on, you know, during that process.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not saying everyone should operate their event safety or crowd safety business the same way, but this is what we like to do and it works for us. And we tend to, whether it's full-time staff members or our part-time team, we tend to attract people who, as my business partner Martin likes to say, are like-minded people. So he describes them as the people who just get stuck in and get it fixed. Yeah. And again, maybe a lot of them aren't involved day-to-day in our office planning something. Maybe they come in for a few briefings, they understand the event, they ask their questions, they understand it better, then they're on the ground changing it. We tend to empower our safety staff greatly. I might be the one sitting in event control in Garda HQ or in India base with all the key people around me. But if we have 30 people out doing safety work for us and they change something, I always say, and Martin always says to them, if they're there working in those roles for us, we trust them implicitly. That's the first thing. So if what they're seeing on the ground isn't working well the way we designed it, change it, improve it, do what you need to do to improve it there and then, and we'll talk about it later and we'll learn from it later. But even if we can't be the ones on the ground implementing it in every single spot, we'll have team members there who have that knowledge. They know the plan, but they're looking at something that's not presenting the way the plan thought it would. And then they'll look to change that. And look, we're quite conscious. There are people who run their businesses doing what we do completely differently. There are people who are way more strategic, just do consultancy, which we do some of as well. But generally, we like the start to finish thing. We like bringing it the whole way through and seeing what we've planned delivered. And sometimes it's delivered exactly per the plan. And that's good too. But we're always happier to be on the ground working with clients to actually implement it and tweak it. And again, as you say, it's got that trust building element to it. They see that we care then.
Yeah.
They see that we're doing things that maybe weren't in the plan that are improving the experience. It's all about the experience with events. So they'll see us doing tiny things on the ground that may never even be mentioned or may get mentioned the next time we're doing in a contract negotiation, and they're sitting across going, do you know what I really like about you guys? that evening when this happened and you did that. It wasn't your job. It wasn't part of the plan. You saw it wasn't working, and you fixed it. I mean, we've had it with events where late in the day, something changes and we now assess that the event needs X. And in this instance, X is a cost of $5,000. And generally, we're genuinely telling a client, look, because of what's happened over there, this needs to happen for your event to be safe. You know, we all operate and live in the real world. Maybe there isn't a $5,000 to make this happen. So we've had situations where on year one of a multi-year deal, something happens late in the day. We're building that relationship with a client. We know there's no budget left because we're administering the budget for them. So we take that $5,000 hit. We invest in something that will be of benefit to the event over the next, you know, 3 or 5 years of the deal. And that makes perfect sense to us from our perspective, because we want those people to be safe at that event. So if there's €5,000 that needs to be spent that we genuinely know the client doesn't have because we're in charge of their budget, but has to be spent, we opted to do it knowing we would benefit for 5 years from that on the event. And what that the effect that has for the client is they immediately then, we know this from talking to them since and working on this event since then, but in their heads immediately they went, okay, these are we definitely picked the right partner here. They get it. They're not thinking I can get the lads to pay for everything, but they believed us when we said your event needs it. They genuinely didn't have money for it. We invested in it. And I mean, that's a relationship we have with a client that we would have to do an awful lot of work to damage beyond repair, even just after doing that one thing. And that, in their heads, they've told us, made it quite clear that A, they had chosen the right safety partner, and B, that we live in the real world. We're not the type of event safety people who go, look, it has to happen. I won't sign off on it. Go find the money. Like we were working deeply entrenched with that client at the time. It had been a stressful time anyway with this event. And when this came up and we were able to go, look, it needs it. You don't have the money. We're going to do that. I mean, I genuinely think we would probably work on that event now for as long as that event is happening. And that's a function of us actually really caring that attendees in our events and events we're involved in are safe. You know, there could have been a $20,000 profit that year on that event just to work on round figures. There's now only a $15,000 profit because we've decided we had to spend $5,000 to do X. But for us, those decisions come quite naturally because our starting point is we want everyone to be safe. And this is a key thing that has to happen. And with all the other context here, we're just going to have to take that hit and spend that ourselves. I mean, that's just an example. And we're not heroes or anything for that. I'm sure other people do the same thing. But I think stuff like that demonstrates to clients that we're actually in this for the right reasons. And also works when we're sitting in rooms with statutory agencies who know we might be arguing over something. We might be debating, you know, the deployment of security personnel and where best they should go. But what we need is that everyone in the room understands that our motivation at all times, as poncy and noble as it may sound, but our motivation at all times is that people are safe at this event. And maybe we have a disagreement about how best to achieve that, but that's 100% what's driving us. I need to pay bills. I need to pay staff and all of that. But as I always say to clients, we're not going to retire on any one event. We look at everything on a medium to long-term basis, and we like to put our five-step process in place, including implementation, and grow with them as their event grows, or not necessarily grows in size or capacity, but develops. I mean, we work on a lot of events that stay at the same capacity every year, but maybe the venue changes, or with something like Dublin Pride, maybe the route changes. And when you do what we do, challenges like that are actually quite exciting. We've weird things like bonfires in the woods, and we've done events where there's aerial performance over moving traffic, and the thing in the zoo to us at the time felt like a real challenge. We kind of seek out those ones that will be challenging, and you know, the risk assessment from the last gig, you're not copying and pasting, that's not going to work. You're going to have to put some real thought into this. We've won awards for the work on the zoo specifically just for the emergency and the risk side of it because it's so complex. And we enjoy that. We enjoy figuring out those difficult problems. And I think if you're into health and safety and a bit nerdy about risk assessments and stuff, you know, finding these challenges that are not the same. If you like variety, it's quite a good field to get into, I always think, because like challenges even on the exact same event year to year, risk assessments and event management plans can look wildly different.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you know it transcends across different sectors and applications of health and safety. You know, when you're looking at opportunities for development and areas that you can get into, get your hands dirty, projects maybe that sometimes people are reluctant to get truly involved in. But I think, Mark, the big thing for me here is, you know, your approach has been greatly successful for you in terms of demonstrating to your clients that you care, and obviously as part of the learning process, as you've discussed, you know, really embracing those challenges and almost seeking them out to make sure that you guys are constantly pushing the boundaries of what you do. So it's really been interesting to listen to what you've had to say here, and hopefully, you know, I'll get to chat to you more about some of the events that you do. And if anybody wants to reach out to you for a chat for any events, if there are any people out there listening to this that need help, where is the best place to find you guys?
Well, the website is the best place to start. It's safeevents.ie. And look, you'll get a real feel probably for us from the website, how we do what we do, and maybe get a vibe about whether we would be the right people to work with you on your event. Again, we do have a very kind of a set way of doing it. So we're not ideal for everyone, but as you said, we do like the challenging ones and we tend to seek them out. So you pop onto the website or just send me an email, mark@safeevents.ie. We joke regularly that some of the best events we've ever done started with the weirdest email or the oddest subject line in an email, where we just sat back and read it a couple of times and went, how could that possibly work? And then you read the body of the email and go, yeah, I still don't know how this could work, but let's meet this person and see, can we figure that out? And I mean, that's happened to us a few times. So yeah, pop us an email, find us on the website, or if you do happen to be at an event you know we're involved in, feel free to try and find us. We may be squirreled away in an event control room looking at a load of cameras and making a load of decisions, but we do like to get out and about as well. So we generally draw straws and see who gets to sit in control and who gets to be out and about, you know.
Depending on the weather, of course.
Well, there's always that too, yeah.
Especially here. No worries. Well, Mark, thanks again for coming on the show with us here. As I said, we've tried to get together for quite a bit of time, so it's awesome to finally get you on, and we'll look forward to sharing this with people and hearing the feedback on it. Take care of yourself and have a great Friday.
Super, thank you. And again, thanks for having me. And look, thanks for doing the podcast. I think a lot of people never realize that people like you who kind of put work into doing these things, they're often a fairly thankless task and a labor of love. And I think, I tend to listen to the podcast that you do. And I've always found that even though someone's operating in a completely different industry to me, I've kind of always come away with a thing or something worth considering or something to bring back to our team and go, do you know what this guy was saying? And so, I mean, there's great benefit in podcasts like this. I think I know I've learned from ones you've done. So hopefully someone might learn something from my waffle.
Good man. That's much appreciated. Take care of yourself and hopefully we'll speak to you again soon. All the best. So that was our conversation with Mark Breen. I hope you found that valuable, and I think he had a lot of really interesting stuff to share there, not only from a health and safety approach point of view, but you know how that approach that they have taken has really contributed to the success of the business. And running through a few themes there that I picked up on, which of course may not be the things that you pick up on, but certainly I hope it'll be good as a means of reflection. And one of the big things he said at the start was around the risk of different teams, you know, within an organization or within for his circumstances an event not communicating properly and missing something in terms of one person doing one thing and another doing another, and the potential impact that has. And we talked about the gas canisters and the potential risk from a vehicle hit from terrorism, obviously, we were discussing there. That inadvertent sort of risk that came out of individual decision making by teams, I felt that was really important. And sometimes that's not really that foreseeable. So I guess from the point of view of managing health and safety, it shows you that, you know, everyone in a room or within a project team needs to be understanding of what the other parties are doing, and just to make sure that they can check that there isn't any knock-on impacts from the strategies and the, you know, the approaches that are being used, because that can be quite you know, ultimately impactful in terms of what happens. Next up then, he talked about the challenge around learning from those instances whenever something like that does happen. You know, we're not always the best at sharing properly and learning from our mistakes. And I think we all have a bit of learning to do there, or certainly most of us do, when it comes to being upfront and honest about when things do go wrong, because they are obviously those failures, or whatever way you want to term them, are the biggest opportunities for learning. And it's really up to us to step up to the plate and be the first ones to demonstrate that we're not afraid to admit when things have gone wrong for the benefit of others. So getting comfortable with admitting your mistakes and showing your mistakes and sharing them with other people who will benefit from hearing about it will not only build trust amongst your teams, but it will encourage other people to do the same, of course, and somebody has to do it first. Otherwise, that culture of transparency won't be able to grow or develop in the first place. One thing that Mark said about his team's approach is that, you know, they try to make decisions based on the risk that's actually there, just, you know, to be proportionate and to be risk-based, not basing decisions on hearsay or speculation, but actually looking at the data that they have and using that to inform their decision making so that they can stand over any decisions that they are making. And as he was saying after that, you know, that really helps when it comes to difficult decisions that need to be made whenever you're not investing in certain strategies, that being able to put the data forward and give the justification as to why you've made a decision and pointed resources in another direction is a very important thing and gives you a lot of strength when it comes to negotiating. Hopefully as well, his 5-point strategy that he shared with us was interesting for you in terms of how he walks through that project management process. And really it is just a, you know, a way of risk assessing, I guess, and stepping through all the motions of developing a strategy that's appropriate for the environment that the team is in that particular time. And of course, if you want to look at that strategy again, I'll send a link to Mark's website so you can go and have a look. He has some more detail on that. A couple of other things that Mark touched on and I think is really valuable for the wider profession. And the first one of those was that if you can implicitly trust your team when it comes to making changes, then that goes a long way in terms of actually making improvements. And he used the example of, you know, a lot of the time when you're strategizing and doing things in theory or putting them down on paper, they don't always, of course, work out, you know, as you expect them to in reality. But what Mark was saying was that within his team, he implicitly trusts each member that would be in control of that piece of work to amend and adjust the work to get the right result without having to come back for validation from anyone else. So I suppose you can think, I'm sure, of examples of times whenever there's, you know, red tape and there's a lot of approvals required for changes to be made. In the environment Mark works in, he finds that placing trust on the people to make those decisions with the knowledge of the intent and what is desired to be achieved, that they will be able to make the best decisions at the time. I think that's a big learning point and something that we could use within businesses much more. And last but not least, to wrap us up on this one, is just a point that Mark made, and I suppose reflecting on what he said and where his business has come, you know, in the last few years, I guess this would probably be, you know, a lot of the reason as to why they've made such progression and got as far as they have. And that is that they don't shy away from a challenge. And this is something that I've mentioned quite a lot on podcasts. And hopefully, you know, for you, it will be a way to get inspiration, just to ask yourself, you know, where is it that I'm shying away from? What task or what operation needs my attention that I've sort of cowered in the corner away from, you know, just because I feel like maybe my knowledge isn't up to scratch, or that it's going to be very difficult to get the right outcomes. Mark, on the other hand, has said, look, that's where his business ultimately thrives, in picking those difficult jobs and demonstrating that the guys are up for a challenge, and realizing that that's where they're going to learn most. So that's something that, not only from a business point of view, but from a personal development point of view, that I think is a great message to take away from Mark's approach here. And hopefully there's something out there within your business, where you're working, within your job, whatever it is you're doing, that you can identify as a challenge and go after it. So that's it for this episode. Hopefully you've got lots of value from that conversation. I will put a few notes and a few links down below the podcast page if you want to find out more. And if you'd like to reach out to me, please feel free to visit us at safety.com, and we'll see you next time. Thank you once again for joining us for this episode. We really hope you got value from the content. If you'd like to provide us with some feedback, which we would obviously love, please take a minute to rate and review the podcast on whichever platform you're using. Also, if you enjoyed it, please hit subscribe to make sure you catch our future episodes. And of course, share it with anyone who you think may find it useful. For more free resources and to find out more about what we do, you're always welcome to visit us at safety.com. Until next time, take care and good luck.